What to do when a school system attacks a mother for the offense of wanting to know what's going to be taught to her kindergartner. We'll discuss that and nothing more in the special sponsored edition of The Editors. I'm Rich Lowry. I'm joined this episode by Nicole Solis, the aforementioned mom, and John Riches of the Goldwater Institute. You are, of course, listening to a National U podcast. This episode is sponsored by the Goldwater Institute, and our regularly scheduled programming will return soon. And with that, Nicole and John, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich.
So, Nicole, let's start with you, and let's begin at the beginning of your journey here. So how does this whole conflagration start from your perspective?
This began when I enrolled my daughter in kindergarten. I called the principal to ask if they were teaching critical race theory or gender theory. And the principal on the phone answered in the affirmative. She said that they teach a certain line of thinking about history in all grades at an age-appropriate level. They said that they, on the first Thanksgiving, when they're teaching that lesson in kindergarten, they tell children what could have been done differently on the first Thanksgiving. And that struck me as a way to shame children for their American heritage. And then in terms of gender theory, they said that they embed the values of gender identity into the classroom.
And this is this is a public school?
This is a public school, right? And this is applying to kindergarten, because I called the principal and specifically asked about kindergarten. They said that they don't refer to the children as boys or girls, and that they don't use gender terminology, or they're at least mindful of refraining from using gender terminology. And I then started asking more questions like, well, what do you do in first grade and second grade? And what other practices do you have? Because I don't think that this would have been in the curriculum, you know, because they're telling me what they do with the children in these practices. And when I did that, the principal didn't want to answer my questions. I got a lot of runaround. We agreed that I would email my questions. But when I emailed those questions, she told me to submit public records requests. And that was repeated by the school committee. They told me to submit public records requests. And when I did submit public records requests, because this was the only way that they would answer my questions, they then turned around and publicly threatened to sue me because they thought that I had submitted too many public records requests. And I knew that they were really just trying to publicly attack me and silence me from asking questions about critical race theory and gender theory being taught in the district. So they had a five-hour public meeting.
Nicole, let me interrupt again.
Yeah.
So in what state do you live in?
This is in Rhode Island. My town is South Kingstown.
And was this a you know, oftentimes a state sets the curriculum and then, you know, the localities figure out how to fulfill it. You know, you have various standards and whatnot. So was this something that was coming from the state down, or was this something that was district specific?
This was district specific because I had asked for the curriculum and they told me even to submit a public records request for that. But there were a couple charter schools around me that had put their curriculum online, and these charter schools were in my town. So this was an issue specific just to South Kingstown School District.
So they tell you, and obviously this is, by this time, the conversation, it's chilly to at the least, or maybe hostile, to submit public records request to just find out what they're teaching the kids.
Yeah. I mean, I believed when they told me that was the way to, you know, evade the questions that I was asking.
Right.
And when I was submitting these public records requests, you know, they were in constant contact with me. They could have emailed me and said, hey, you know, why don't you just email us your questions? We're getting too many requests. But instead, they really took this aggressive, offensive against me. And I knew that it was meant to be, you know, a signal to everyone in my community that if you ask too many questions, they would come after you. I don't think they were used to being asked a lot of questions. And I think that they thought that I would be turned off by the public records request process.
Sorry, again, just to take a step back. So what's your background? Do you have any background in public advocacy or litigation or any of this, or you just brought to the table being a concerned parent who really wanted to know what's going on?
Well, I'm a lawyer, but I wasn't really looking at this as a legal issue. I really was just wanted to know what my kindergartner would be taught. And, you know, I didn't have any public records request experience as an attorney when I practiced. So I wasn't intimidated by the public records request process, and I wasn't intimidated by engaging government. But this was really just me being a mom trying to get some answers about what's going on in school.
Obviously, part of the play here, and you've seen it repeated all over the place, is to make the concerned parent feel as though he or she is an outlier, a freak, a troublemaker, crazy. You know, how can you possibly be bothering us with these irrational requests?
Right. I mean, the criticism I got right away was that I was some sort of political activist or radical, and that I was being funded by dark money. And being involved in politics was something I never had experience doing that. You know, I didn't really have any interest in politics until all of this happened.
So, okay. So I've kept on interrupting you. So public records request, and then what happens next?
So they had their meeting on June 2nd, where they treated me like I was on trial. I call it my show trial. There were hundreds of people that came to the meeting, and the 5-hour long meeting was meant to examine my character, my moral character for submitting these requests that I had about critical race theory and gender theory. They insinuated that I was racist during this meeting. They said that I was causing chaos and wreaking havoc. Those are direct quotes from the school committee. And they allowed people in public comment to speak against me. One person turned directly to me and said that my ancestors skinned her ancestors alive. And I had never met this person, and she doesn't know, you know, who my ancestors are. So that was really startling. They, in the meeting, one school committee member said she felt unsafe. Two of them started crying. I mean, it was really just an extraordinary show of political theater that was meant to target me. And I think it didn't go the way they wanted, because it really just ended up exposing all of their antics and made them out to be these really vicious bullies.
So when you say that you were in effect put on trial, was this a meeting about whether to fulfill your request, or what was the rationale of the meeting?
Right. So on the agenda, they wrote that they would have a discussion or take action with litigation against Nicole Solis for filing over 160 public records requests. So whether they would sue me was the main point of the meeting. They had arranged my public records requests in various categories, different lists that they projected onto a big screen. They also identified my husband. They wrote his name and then in parentheses, Nicole's husband, to show the public records request that he made. And they repeatedly said, I just don't understand why any individual would be asking these questions. This is obviously an attack on our school district. So just the fact that I had submitted these public records requests, they were trying to prove to my community, made me racist, made me evil, really. And the public comment was kind of split 50-50. A lot of people came out and said, look, public information is public information. Parents can ask whatever they want. And then other people came out and, you know, were saying that I really was this terrible person for asking all of these questions.
So how did people, did this get coverage in the local papers, or how did so many people know to turn out?
Well, I had been posting what I was finding through my public records requests and through my own investigation of my school district in a private Facebook group to try to raise awareness about indoctrination. So the people in that group were just there to learn more about what was going on. But it turned out the people in this group ended up coming out to this meeting and supporting me. So I was really lucky that I, unbeknownst to me, was creating a support group before this happened to me. And then another really important part of this is that Legal Insurrection, which is owned by Bill Jacobson, they hosted my story and really put it out into the forefront. And it was it helped a lot of Rhode Islanders know what was going on, because local media wasn't really covering it. They're very much in bed with the teachers union. So it was really the national coverage that got people's attention.
So did they reach any conclusion at this meeting, which by the way, sounds like some of the craziest stuff you hear about on college campuses, people saying they're unsafe and weeping and all that. But was there an outcome?
Yes, they voted unanimously not to sue me. I don't know if that was the plan anyway, because I think this whole meeting was just meant to humiliate me. So I really don't know, you know, whether they were going to really move forward with a lawsuit against me. But they made statements like, oh, well, we don't want to be political, so we're not going to sue Nicole. And this sort of became into, you know, a political theater that we didn't mean. But I think that was exactly what they meant to do. So when that was over, I thought that the issue was over. But then, like I said, a month or so later, that's when a constable came to my door with a complaint from the National Education Association, now saying that they were suing me and my husband for making the public records requests that, you know, my school district was so unhappy about.
So that must have been a shock.
That was a shock. you know, I felt really lucky because at this point the Goldwater Institute was already representing me. So I can tell you it's a lot less scary to be sued when you already have an attorney and, you know, a really fantastic attorney like the Goldwater Institute on your side. But I really just can't imagine what another parent would feel when the largest teachers union in the country serves you with a lawsuit and you wouldn't even know where to begin.
Yeah, it's shocking. So when did you get connected to the Goldwater folks?
Goldwater reached out to me shortly after my my school board meeting where they were, you know, threatening to sue me. I can't really remember when exactly when we connected, but the Goldwater Institute resubmitted a request for information about critical race theory on my behalf. And they're also representing me on a open meetings law complaint with against my school district for not letting me into public meetings where they were having curriculum changes regarding the diversity, equity, and inclusion committees that we're seeing pop up all around the country.
We'll get John in here in a second on the Goldwater end, but Del, tell us a little bit more about the fury of the NEA lawsuit against you and your husband.
Okay, so the NEA is asking a judge for declaratory relief to not release public info coming out from my public information request. And they specifically talk about the emails I requested from union teachers, where they are afraid that if emails are revealed where union teachers are discussing critical race theory or having any kind of, you know, engagement with critical race theory, that the teachers will be harassed. And they even attached to the complaint two media write-ups about my case. And it appears that they're using that as evidence to say, well, you know, conservative news outlets are already reporting on this, so the teachers are going to be harassed. Of course, no one wants anyone to be harassed. I think what's really going on is they want there to insulate their teachers from public scrutiny if they are discussing critical race theory and how they're implementing it in the classroom. You'll hear more from John Riches about this, but you know they have no standing to do this, and they are really interfering on my civil right to access and request public information, and it's just shocking that they think that they can interfere in that process where they really have no place.
Yeah, I mean, it's the education system like taking on a life of its own and rising up and attacking parents who want to know what's being taught to their children, which is like a really important thing for parents to know, obviously. So John, first of all, tell us, for those who don't know, everyone should know, in my view, because you guys do such great work, but tell us a little bit about the Goldwater Institute and what you guys have been doing in Nicole's case.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that. So we've been around for about 30 years or so, and we're set up as a traditional state-based think tank focused on accountable government, free enterprise, private property rights, healthcare, education reform. And then in 2007, we stood up our public interest litigation component. So when we did that a dozen or so years ago, we were one of the first state-based organizations in the country to have the ability to do public policy research and analysis and have a public interest litigation component kind of all under one roof. So we got interested in Nicole's case very early on. We've done a lot of work in academic transparency. So a real, in our view, kind of simple principle that parents should know what their kids are going to learn. They frankly shouldn't have to go through any public records or other formal process to get that information. School districts and administrators should put this information in on an easily accessible format so that when Nicole and other parents are deciding where they want to send their kids, they can go to the internet and say, oh, this is what they're teaching at this school, and this is what they're teaching at that school. And it's right there and it's available. And we've drafted, we've done a lot of research, we've drafted some legislation along these lines. It's an important issue to us. Open and transparent government is an important issue to us. And I learned about Nicole's case. We learned about Nicole's case shortly after the district threatened to sue her. So, it was really pretty astonishing to us. You had a parent asking simple questions of a school district. A district, rather than answering those questions, directed her into this formal legal public records process. When she complied with that process and did what they told her to do, they then turned around and threatened to sue her. Really shocked us. And we felt that that was a real brazen intimidation tactic. It was an assault on parents' rights to know what their kids are going to learn. So we were able to connect with Nicole and talk about her case. We, in fact, had a similar case out in Arizona about a dozen years ago where some other parents were sued by a school district for requesting information along somewhat similar lines. But after we connected with Nicole, we learned that not only were these threats of litigation out there, but this district was, really skirting the line on the public records law. It appeared to us to be to later then be violating open meetings laws, really just trying to hide its business from parents and from Nicole. And so we're like, look, we want to try and get to the bottom of this. And as we were pursuing some of these public records and open meetings issues, then the National Education Association, of course, one of the most powerful special interests in the country, turned around and sued Nicole. And, that was just, that's just appalling for all sorts of reasons, not to mention completely legally baseless.
Yeah. So the line you commonly hear about this is, one, there's no such thing as CRT and it's not being taught in the schools, nothing associated with it is. And two, people who are complaining about this are the aggressors. So here you have a case where Nicole just wants the information, right? Which is not a hostile act, and it's a normal act. And then she is aggressed against, literally, by the NEA. And where, John, does the case stand at the moment?
So the NEA, in a really brazen move, filed, when they first filed the case, they named Nicole as a defendant. So they named the school district and Nicole as a defendant, and they moved for a temporary restraining order. So they went to the judge and said, give us an immediate order that prevents the school district from complying with the public records process, essentially, or from following the public records law. We then filed a response to that. And the morning of the hearing, I think the union was well aware that it was far outside of its of its legal boundaries and withdrew its request for a temporary restraining order. The same day that happened, we have now filed essentially a motion to get the entire case dismissed. The union, as a third party, has no standing to interfere with a public records process. The public records process is between the public records requester and the government entity responding to the records request. No third party has standing to come and intervene and disrupt that statutory right of the public to know what their government is up to. So we filed a motion on that basis. And then we've also included a anti-SLAPP claim. SLAPP stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. And what that means is, if somebody files a lawsuit to interfere with the exercise of another party's First Amendment rights, including its rights to access public information like this, then the defendant, in this case, Nicole, is immune from suit. And the other party can be liable for attorney fees and damages, et cetera. So we've asked for the court to award both attorney fees and damages for Nicole simply having to defend this completely baseless action.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask, Nicole, is, you know, very often lawsuits, frivolous lawsuits, they are themselves conceived by the other party as a form of punishment. So whether the NEA wins or loses, and they're going to lose, right, eventually here, they have made you have to worry about this, have to think about this, have to, you know, you're getting help, thank God, but still, it's an enormous weight on you that you didn't want to bear. Just you wanted to send your child to kindergarten and find out what the curriculum was, and here you are being dragged through this litigation.
Yeah, you know, I'm lucky that I already had a lawyer on my side, but my life is still now completely different than it was 6 months ago. 6 months ago, I was a nobody. Now I'm in the national media defending myself in the arena of public opinion. And I'm doing that because I felt like I had to do that. My school first publicly attacked me, and I felt that I needed a public response. And I also thought about, you know, okay, what's the drawback and the repercussions for my family if I become someone that's in the media, and that itself is very stressful. My family's handling it just fine, but it's still something we never planned on. It's something that we're learning as we go along. And that alone is, just really hard to explain to someone who went from just being a mom, you know, living a private life, and now you're, you know, basically a public figure and feeling like you have to do that.
And is your child in the school?
I pulled my daughter out of public school. Another thing they did to me that was just really shocking and really crossed the line, they had hired a PR firm to smear me in the national media. And that was the moment when I thought, okay, this is like psychotic. I can't in good conscience keep my daughter in this school. They're going to target her. So I put her in a Catholic school, and I was very clear with them about why I'm coming to them. And they were very honest with me that they did not teach critical race theory or gender theory.
And have we learned anything more about what the curriculum is in the public school there, are they still hiding the ball on that?
Well, I learned that they actually don't have any curriculum at all. And that was one of the reasons why they gave me such a runaround with getting me the curriculum. They just have teachers kind of fly by the seat of their pants. You know, maybe they do a good job without any kind of unified curriculum, but I am learning piecemeal through what I'm finding on my own, which is not through public records requests. It's really just combing the website and looking at all of their other social media accounts, that they are teaching critical race theory in practices. They solicited an equity auditor who is fluent in critical race theory. That was something I uncovered with my public records requests. I'm waiting for them to conduct this equity audit and get the results of it. They haven't done it yet, as far as I know. And then I'm finding education servicers that put out a tweet that says, "Congratulations, South Kingstown School District, on implementing CRT practices," which obviously stands for critical race theory or culturally responsive teaching, which are really one and the same thing. So it's very difficult to find real pieces of the curriculum because the curriculum doesn't exist in South Kingstown. That was another layer that came as a surprise to me later, that, you know, they're also just kind of incompetent.
So we're principal school by school kind of wing it, and this principal in the school is just particularly bad, or again, was it a district-wide thing?
It's a district-wide thing. So teachers are teaching their own classes, but there's no way for you to know that your child at one school at the district is getting the same you know, curriculum taught to them in another school in the district. So like I said, I think that was an added layer that maybe they regret now, that they weren't just honest with me and said, "Well, we don't have curriculum, we're working on it." But it's also another way that you can kind of hide critical race theory if you're not, you know, listing in your curriculum the programs that you have and what exactly you're teaching from school to school.
Right. And so John, you guys feel as though you have very solid legal arguments to help parents like Nicole, and you know, there are cases like this all around the country. Obviously, that the exact circumstances are different, but it's kind of the parental rights aspect of this is that on very solid footing.
Yeah. And look, I mean, you kind of put your finger on it too, Rich, when you said, you know, the union, it, from its perspective, doesn't really care either way. It probably knows it's going to lose. In its view, the process is the punishment. But, you know, this case, you know, they went after Nicole. They went after the wrong parent when they did that. But other parents are looking and the unions are looking. And to the extent they see, and they're going to see in this case, that this sort of harassment, this sort of abuse against the parents isn't going to be tolerated. It's going to get slapped down in the courts. It's going to send a really important message. So I think Nicole's case is crucially important for that reason. And, you know, in fact, we had another case this morning where we got a favorable ruling from a court where a couple parents out in Virginia had requested public records and the school district produced them and then said, whoops, we forgot to redact information from them. And meanwhile, the parents had posted the public records on a website that they operated. They sort of operated as a district watchdog. And the school district went and got a court order telling them to take the records off the internet, which of course they can't do. It's a prior restraint on speech. So today a judge dissolved an order requiring them to put the records up on the internet. And we're expecting a final order in that case really soon. So I think, as you say, we're seeing this throughout the country. This was frankly one of the most brazen we've seen. This is where we've seen the union take a driver's seat role. But I think this case sends a very important message that this sort of thing isn't going to be tolerated. Parents got a right to know what their kids are learning.
And how do you acquire these cases? Is it people coming to you, or are you hearing about them, or just a little vote?
We heard about Nicole's, and so we reached out to Nicole. Nicole has brought us a couple interesting cases just because she's now plugged into so many parents throughout the country, including the Virginia case I just mentioned. And now, of course, we've had several parents reach out to us directly where we have an issue involving Scottsdale Unified School District and its own set of problems. So we have a lot of parents reaching out to us directly now, and I'd encourage others to the extent they're facing any of these problems.
And this is, you've mentioned that academic transparency has been a cause of yours for a while. So this kind of cluster of cases is not entirely new, but it also fits more broadly into your worldview and perspective, right? Which is protecting people's rights from overbearing public institutions or people related to public institutions like the NEA is.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, in our view, and I think this goes back to our country's founding, parents have a fundamental right to direct the upbringing of their children. And for most of our history, I think most people in this country agreed with that. But now you have this weird situation where you're getting comments from everybody from sitting governors to, you know, special interest labor unions who are disputing this, that parents, well, maybe they really don't have a right to direct the upbringing of their children. Maybe bureaucrats instead have a right to do that without parental input. That's just fundamentally incorrect as a legal matter, as a constitutional matter, frankly, as a moral matter. We're going to fight against that. We're going to advance academic transparency, and we're going to take these cases when they come along.
So Nicole, what advice do you have to other parents who might be in a similar situation as yours and maybe, you know, be daunted or maybe be thinking, I don't want to be famous or infamous as the case may be. I don't want to have my reputation torn down by these school districts and administrators. What's your advice to folks?
I want to demystify the thing we're hearing a lot, which is like, oh, you know, these brave parents and, you know, they're being retaliated against and there's so much courage. And, you know, that's true. But retaliation now, I think the tide is turning. It's not really happening as much because parents are claiming the narrative. You know, they retaliated against me and I overcame it. And now I have more support than I ever thought I would have. I have more friends, I have more allies, and retaliation is, I just want people to know it's not that bad. If you can just get past it, people have short memories. They're going to move on to the next scandal. And the other thing I want parents to do is, you know, when you're engaging your school district, don't forget to be taking action beyond just school board meetings where you're expressing your dissatisfaction. I think the only way that we're going to get critical race theory out of school and that parents are going to have a voice in their education is two ways. We need academic transparency, like the policy that Goldwater is promoting, because then we can see everything they're doing. And then we also need to push for school choice. I'm hoping that academic transparency will kick into action the sort of supply and demand in the marketplace that, you know, all other industries are subject to. And that once parents start seeing what's being taught, they're going to say, okay, well, I'm going to go to a different school if you're doing this. And if they can't go to a different school, then parents need to step up and start pushing for school choice legislation. So that way we can go to a different school if we don't like what's being taught.
Yeah, I did a big piece earlier this year on the fight in the school board races in Southlake, Texas, just kind of a deep dive with the parents there who won a wonderful victory. And that was one of their key points is what you just hit on. You got to know what they're doing and you got to do the records request and find it. Cause you just can't count on what they're telling you. One, two, you can't just go away when they want to brush you off. And, you know, they had this insane, like 50 page document that the school board was going to adopt with all this so-called diversity, equity, inclusion stuff. It would have been amounted to kind of a revolution in that school district, you know, along Ibram Kendi lines. And it would have happened with almost no one noticing if they hadn't dug in and made a big stink out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, right there, just paying attention to what's going on in your school district is so important. But at this point, I think maybe we need to conserve our energy to take action that is beyond just going to those school board meetings. You know, if you find something that your school district is doing that strikes you as unconstitutional, you know, maybe don't go scream about it at a school board meeting. You know, it's your right and you can, especially if you want to raise awareness, but maybe just quietly take it to a lawyer or a public interest group, you know, like Goldwater. So that way you can take maybe more effective action, like you know, filing a lawsuit or seeing what your legal options are.
Standing up and making the statement at a meeting that might get, you know, go viral, right, but won't necessarily change things.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me go to each of you for final thoughts. John, any conclusion that you want to wrap a bow on this discussion?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, in addition to just this sort of obvious thing that we all should agree on, that parents have a right to know what their kids are going to learn. And when there's pushback against that, parents and others should stand up against it. I think Nicole's case has also really highlighted the really pernicious influence of public sector unions in this country. I mean, here you have the NEA, which brings in $300 million a year, and they have nothing better to do than, you know, focus on trying to harass and intimidate a mom that is just trying to figure out what her daughter's trying to learn. I mean, they're spending tens of millions of dollars in elections. You know, why aren't they making student learning a priority instead of getting involved in all of these political issues that have nothing whatsoever to do with a child's education? So I hope that as parents wake up to the importance of academic transparency and school choice, they also wake up to the fact that there is a big gorilla in the room that does not have their interest at heart, that does not have students' interest at heart, and that's the public sector, teachers' unions. And I think Nicole's case has certainly highlighted that as well.
Nicole, final thoughts for us?
Parents need to learn everything they can about their school district, even if it looks like nothing is wrong. Learn all the policies that your school district has online. Submit your public records requests. And if you find something that you think doesn't look right, engage your school district, ask questions, make sure everything is in writing with email. If you call them, record your phone calls if you're in a one-party state and you don't need their consent. And then if you need help and you feel alone, start your own support group. Alana Fishbein is the president of No Left Turn in Education. She invited a few friends over to her house and said, come on over, I'm starting a movement. So this can happen with any parent that decides to pay attention and take action. And we need more parents doing that so we get more and more support groups around the country.
Great. Well, John, thanks so much. Thanks for the work that Goldwater does. And Nicole, I think you're being modest. You know, you say it's not that daunting. It's not easy what you've done. It is not easy. I'm in the public sphere and it bothers me still when people criticize me or call me names, nasty names. It's no small thing what you've done. So thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, and my hat's off to you. And I wish you and your family Godspeed.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rich. Much appreciated.
Well, that's it for us. You've been listening to a National Review podcast. Any rebroadcast, retransmission, or account of this game without the express written permission of National Review Magazine is strictly prohibited. This podcast has been produced by the incomparable Sarah Schutte, who makes it sound better than we deserve. Thanks again to Nicole and John and to Goldwater Institute. And thanks especially to all of you for listening. We're the editors. We'll see you next time.